Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Our guest tonight is Brian McAllister, longtime player, who'll discuss some of the promos he's played in the past. Although Brian and I didn't meet until recently, we played some of the same promotions, but we played them differently. We're hoping a comparison of the different ways we did it is both informative and interesting. After all, every player brings a unique set of skills and motivations and therefore attacks each problem differently than anyone else. In Las Vegas, for the past few days, there's been the annual gaming show called Global Gaming Expo, also G2E. Now, I looked at video poker games. I think Shaq looked primarily at table games and booth babes, although I did run into him checking out the new video poker games as well. Now, the new video poker games offered by videopoker.com, we talked about these a couple weeks ago when we had Mike Fields as our guest. Although there were a number of other games at the IGT booth on display, the games by videopoker.com, particularly Ultimate Aces and Hyper Bonus Poker, in my opinion, have the best chance for success. IGT owns something like 90% of the video poker market. Many companies are getting out of that market because they don't want to compete with IGT. Like a Bally didn't have anything on display, an Aristocrat didn't have anything on display. But WMS, used to be called Williams, appears to be entering this market in a really big way. Now, one of the ways they're doing this is in pay schedules. They seem to be offering the same games as pay schedules as IGT, except the straight flushes pay $275 instead of $250. This adds 0.055. In other words, 9-6 jacks goes from 99.544 to 99.599. Now, it's not a big change, but it's a couple bucks an hour for a $1.05 coin player. And if you play a lot, this can be $1,000 or $2,000 a year. So they're hoping that that's going to cause players to switch. The most interesting new game they had at WMS was called No Risk Double Up. Now, Double Up is a feature that's on most video poker games that can be turned on at the casino's options. It's frequently not turned on. But in the no-risk version, you pay 10 coins to start with for what's normally a 5-coin bet. Frequently, you get the double-up feature, and I'll explain how you get that. But once you do get it, then you're dealt 5 cards, and you can pick any one of the 5. Now, 4 out of the 5 are aces, and that will give you 2x and a chance to go on. And 1 out of the 5 is a joker, which means you didn't get this multiplier. So, too bad, Charlie. Now, if you get the multiplier at the 2x level, now you get 5 cards at the 4x level. But now there's only 3 aces and 2 jokers. If you pass that, which you have 60% chance, you get the 8x is two aces and three jokers, and the 16X is one ace and four jokers. To go all the way up to 16X is about 1 in 52. So if you were playing for quarters, one every 52 royals you get, one of them's going to be $16,000. And so the way you get the multipliers is if you get any paying combination, it'll show on the jacks or better six spaces over to the right. And so it randomly flickers back and forth, and one of those spaces is the double up. So you'll have one out of six chance on the jacks or better. For two pair and three of a kind, it's a one in four chance. For straights and flushes, it's a one in three chance. Full houses, it's 50-50, and then higher than that, it's every time. So the players can see this, and they can see that it's random, or that they can see that how many times it's happened. On the machine, they tell you it's random, and I believe it. And I think it's an interesting concept, and it may work. One thing that may be good or may be bad, depending on your point of view, is for right now, Stations has an exclusive in the locals market in Vegas, and Harrah's has an exclusive. I've heard each of those have 300 machines they promised to order and buy, and they have a 6 months exclusive contract. That was that last part of secondhand, so those numbers might be not perfect, but it's a fairly knowledgeable secondhand, so they're probably right. After that 6 month period, probably they'll be available everywhere. All right. Now, in the table games, I didn't look at a lot of table games, but I did look at Mulligan Poker, which, of course, is Shaq's game. So, Michael, was this like a birth of a child, pass out cigars moment for you?
Yes, it was. This is the first time I've ever seen a game that I did at the gaming show. I invented a game several years ago called Ties Win Blackjack, which had a field trial at the Edgewater in Laughlin. And it did not perform very well, so that was kind of like having a miscarriage. But this game, I think, is much better, and with Shuffle Master promoting it, I think it has a much better chance. So I was excited and to see it there.
Well, good. Now, right next to your game, Jeff Hall, who was on the show a few months ago, and his game is it Free Bet Blackjack?
Yes, it is.
Now, his is right next. Now, Jeff he's a salesman kind of personality. So he was there telling everybody what made his game the best in the world. And for the most part, you stayed away and let the booth babes explain the game. If you had to do it over again, would you still do it the same way? Or would you think trying to talk people into it might help sales?
I would probably do it the same way and not try to scare anybody away. Jeff is very extroverted, and I'm very introverted. I hate sales. I couldn't sell someone dying of thirst a bottle of water. So I thought that my sour attitude might actually put people off. But I did kind of hang around the game a little bit just to get a sense if people liked it, but I wasn't bothering anyone who actually played it. And furthermore, I think that I could be much more effective promoting the game on my website. I plan to do a free demo, much like my other demo games, to hopefully get people interested in it.
Very good. All right. And I were at my game, I probably would have tried the Jeff approach, try to do it both ways. Get the demo out there, but
They had a very lovely dealer on my game most of the time, and I think that most people there, if given the choice at looking at her or talking to a middle-aged white guy, probably would choose looking at her.
So you were you approved of your booth babe, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Speaking of Mulligan Poker, when you talked about it last week, you mentioned that it had a low element of risk. Now, I'd never heard of that metric before, so I asked you last week to to plan to tell about it, tell us about it this week. So have you made plans?
Yes. Element of risk is a statistic that I have been trying to introduce into the vernacular of gamblers for many years. Normally, when people talk about how good of a bet a game is, they mention the house edge. And while this is not bad, I think that for purposes of comparing one game to another, you should look at the total amount of money that the player is wagering. For example, in blackjack, if the game has a 0.5% house advantage, that means for every dollar you bet that you can expect to lose 0.5. And that does not mean 0.5 based on all the doubles and splits. It's just the original wager. Now, most of the time, you're only going to be betting that original wager. So in blackjack, the house advantage is a pretty good metric for explaining the value of the bet. But let's compare roulette with Caribbean stud poker. The house advantage in roulette is 5.26%, and in Caribbean stud, it's 5.22% with optimal strategy. However, in Caribbean stud, you are making a raise bet much of the time, which is 2 times the ante, so you're getting a lot more money on the table after your original bet. Using just the house advantage, it looks like roulette and Caribbean stud are about equally good bets. But when you consider all the raising you do in Caribbean stud, the element of risk, which is the ratio of the expected loss to the total amount that you can expect to bet, is 2.55%, or about half of the house advantage. So that's what I think that a player should be looking at when determining, you know, what value am I getting from this game. I also think that lots of casinos, when they rate players, they incorrectly rate all of the raising that the player does in a game. And that can result in something that's good for us. They overrate us and we get more comps. So that's another reason that to understand the distinction between the house advantage and the element of risk.
Now, I'm mainly a video poker player, and in almost all video poker games, you make one bet and you play the hand until the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that particular case, the element of risk and the household are identical. Is that correct?
That's correct. Any game where there's no subsequent raises or wages or subsequent wagers for any reason, the house advantage and element of risk will be exactly the same.
So one game I could think of offhand in the video poker family would be Double Down Stud, where there is an optional bet that you can make at one point, and so that would have an element of risk metric, although presumably each pay schedule would have its own metric.
Indeed.
All right. So let's talk about Brian McAllister. Brian has been a advantage player for many years. He started playing in casinos when he was too young to play in casinos. Later on, he went to college, Caltech, which is the Los Angeles version of MIT, I suppose, although graduates of either school would probably be offended by that comparison. And anyway, in Caltech, he hooked up with actually a friend of mine now, but for the purposes of tonight, we'll call that friend Sam. Now, blackjack, video poker, and promotions were Brian's bread and butter in the casinos. Tonight, we're going to reminisce about some of the long-gone promotions, although the methodology used then often is still applicable today. And we're going to discuss some of the differences between the way Brian attacked these promotions and the way I did, and hopefully it'll generate some knowledge for people. So, Brian McAllister, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hello. How are you?
Well.
I'm good.
All right. Very good.
Now, in the 90s, there were some generous promotions at Bob Stupak's Vegas World, which is now where the Stratosphere is. So how did those work?
Okay. So first of all, you know, the Vegas World, I guess for people who weren't gambling back then. It was really just, and I don't feel bad about saying this because it doesn't exist anymore. It was really kind of the goofiest casino ever built. And what's funny is that there, you know, within this casino, which was basically really, really gaudy, it had kind of a space theme to it. Some parts of it didn't smell so good, and you know, there were other parts of it that were a little bit shady. In fact, I think
there are other casinos in Las Vegas that don't smell so good.
Well, yeah, I guess. Well, what's funny about this one is, like, you know, Bob Stupak, I guess, was always trying to get, you know, some sort of edge on something. And I know people who live in Vegas probably know a lot more about him because I know he was involved in politics for some time. But, you know, one of the things he tried to do, which I guess was a copy of the horseshoe, was to display $1 million. And so he had this $1 million display, and it looked like bundles of $100 bills, some, you know, rare thousands and 500s and things like that. But what's funny is that the lights on it caused the bills to kind of peel back, and they were stacks of ones that had like 100 on top of it. I mean, this is sort of a, you know, I'm guessing there wasn't anything close to $1 million in there.
He also used some $1,000 and $10,000 casino chips in there to make up. And of course, those cost him 3 cents a piece to put there.
Right.
So that was part of his $1 million, were these casino chips with his name on it.
And he had this whole like $1 million theme. There were these slot pulls they'd give away on this $1 million slot machine that had 7 reels on it. That had like basically 1 7 and everything else was blank. And of course, I'm sure the sevens didn't come up all that often, if at all. Anyway,
it came up once. Yeah, it did come up once, and of course he promoted it when it did, but it was one in a zillion chance. It was just awful.
But anyway, we came across this, and you know, it was in sort of the early days of the internet. There were some forums and things. I don't know that anybody had any web pages as such, so you know, browsers really hadn't come in yet. And you know, but there were like these text-based forums, and there was one gambling forum that somebody decided to post that they had been going to Vegas for all of these promotions, and the promotions basically allowed you to pay ahead of time, and what they would do is they'd give you a room for a couple of nights and some amount of promotional play. It was either in the form of slot play or table play. And what was interesting is every time you took these promotions, apparently they'd get a little bit better trying to get you to come back. And the very, very latest ones actually had edge to it. And
significant edge.
Oh, yeah. So for a couple of reasons, actually. And there's somebody had posted one of the latest ones. I'm not sure if it was the latest one or... it could just be that I don't remember the exact specifics of it, but what I could recall, for $400, you get a room for two nights and $1,000 of promotional action chips that were for table games. Now, these chips were only one shot, so whether you won or lost with them, the chip went away. So if you put a $5 bet down in one of these and you won, it would be exchanged for a $5 chip of real money. If you lost, it went away. So that was actually worth $500, assuming you could get even money on all of your chips. And then there was an additional amount of slot play, which they would give to you in the form of these gigantic slot tokens that had this weird ridge on them. I mean, these were big, heavy, clunky tokens that could only be played in certain machines. And
$300 worth of machines could usually be converted to something like $24 or something, real bad rate.
Oh yeah, there wasn't anything at all worthwhile about that part. So we just kind of ignored that, or just, you know, took it as just a little bit of a extra edge. But obviously, the promotion in itself was good. Now, the first thing that we thought of doing was to take the $500. I mean, we were college students at the time, and so I didn't really have a lot of capital. In fact, we would just float these things on credit cards and. You know, just worry about the bill after we've cashed it all in. We weren't really there to lose, actually. So what we wanted to do was try to figure out the best way of, you know, hedging this. And, of course, you could go and play red and black and roulette and cover the greens with some additional money and then basically cash out for slightly less than full value. But when we got talking about it, when you could sit down and play blackjack for it, they had an unusual blackjack game in that they had a single-deck game where they dealt to the last card. And blackjack only paid even money. Now, normally blackjack paying even money is very, very bad, but it's just very interesting to deal the card actually to the last card, meaning they would actually reshuffle and deal in the middle of a hand if they were in the middle of dealing. And I think I remember Bob Stupak writing somewhere that he was basically challenging card counters to come in and beat this game. So I think he figured there was no way really to duel it. But what was interesting was if you use the action chips, the dealers would let you double down using real money, and they would let you split using real money, and you could do things like doubling down on blackjack. So effectively, this was tripling down because you had $5 of fake money, and then you could put $5 of real money behind it if you wanted to create that sort of situation. So my friends and I worked out the optimal strategy for all of this, and actually we took it a few steps further. I mean, we had a pretty sophisticated account system that went along with this and strategy adjustments accordingly. And there were some bizarre plays on there, especially near the ends of the deck. So we found that basically, you know, this $500 worth of action chips could actually be worth quite a bit more than that. We had when we saw that we could make a lot of money with these things, we figured we would try to get our hands on as many of these as possible. So I know that you, Bob, have mentioned this in your $1 million video poker book.
Uh-huh.
That you did similar things with this, but we started signing onto this promotion under different names. Now, I didn't go the route of using family members or anything like that. I basically just used variations of my own name. My friend Sam decided to borrow his brother's driver's license and kind of sign in as him. So with different combinations of first and middle names, we were able to generate multiple of these packages at any one time. So we would check into like 7 rooms, for instance. And I know you had something very similar. In fact, I think you did it way more than we did.
Yeah, I would use a lot of names of many of people that I had never met before. They had been dead for probably they used to live in Chicago, so they could still vote. Good. Now, at the time, I did on craps both sides with the suitable amount on the 12, which was a lower. You had to put a lower amount on the 12 than you would on the zeros.
So oh, yeah, the craps would have been better. We never actually did the roulette thing. We just talked about it as a possibility.
But if I did it today, I would probably not take the guaranteed way. I just might do it on craps and gamble it up. Because today it's a low amount of money for me, and there's no reason. You know, every time you take both sides of craps, you're guaranteed losing. So there's a better EV just to take one side. But,
oh, yeah. Well, you had to be careful about the crapless craps, too. I don't know if you remember that game.
I do remember that game, and you had to stay away from theirs. Let's let Michael ask you a different question.
Yeah, before I get to that, I want to say, you know, good for you. I view that as scamming the scammer. I recall the many times I would sneak into my father's Playboy collection, and it seemed like every single one of them had this promotion for the Vegas World free vacation, and it said, as I recall the details, it was $400, and he was going to give you $1,000 in gambling money, and it said, I must be some kind of an idiot, but I'm willing to cough up the $600 loss just to get a new player. As you two just said, a lot of these chips were either half value, and the slot tokens, which were some of the money, was maybe 5% value. And I have to say that, in my opinion, Hooters is doing this today, is they have advertising all over the place about $200, if I remember correctly, in free slot play for new members. And this slot play is worth nowhere near $200. I estimate it to be worth about $5. Basically, what they did is they took a normal slot machine and taped over the pay table their own pays. So what normally might pay $10,000 now pays $50. So I think that is unethical. And if you have a chance to beat them at their own game, go for it. So thank you for listening to my rant on that. So on to your question. In Bob's book, $1 Million Video Poker, he confesses to some angle shooting that I don't think he would attempt today. It seems like the two of you did some of the same things from what I hear. So can you tell us more about some of the more shady things that you did back in the day?
In particular, the open change door on a slot.
Oh, yeah. So I don't think we did a whole lot of shady things. We have there's a couple things that stand out, but one of them definitely was the over 100% payback video poker machine. Now, we noticed, because we would go there, and we knew about blackjack. We didn't know that video poker was potentially beatable. In fact, we sort of assumed that anything that was a machine that didn't involve human interaction was not beatable. And in fact, I'm very glad to have learned otherwise, because blackjack really is kind of a hassle, because you have to do a lot of hiding of what you're doing. But the machines, you know, they don't care. I mean, you can even pull out a chart, and just go to town. So when we were at Vegas World, we noticed that some of the machines prominently displayed this over 100% payback, and then in fine print it said with maximum coins played and optimal play. So we were very intrigued by this, and we thought it might have been another of Bob's lies. But we
this is
went
Bob
back
Stupak's to... lies, by the way, folks. He's not he's not trashing me this time. Okay, go ahead.
No. So we went back and we wrote some software, because that's basically what you had to do. I mean, you didn't really have resources like you do it today. And basically confirmed that that was, in fact, true. Like, they had 10-7, they had 10-6 jacks or better machines, or 9-7 jacks or better machines, both of which are over 100%. And so we started learning how to play these. And these, of course, we weren't going to get really rich, but then again, we were college students again. So one day we sat down at one of these machines, and I accidentally kicked the bottom of the machine, and the door where the hopper sits, where all the quarters fall into, swung open slowly. And my friend and I kind of looked at each other, and we quietly shut the door, and we sort of talked about what we would do, going forward with this information. Well, one thing that was interesting was that we were playing in a bathroom hallway. Now, Vegas World, I guess, was kind of trying to optimize their space for slot machines, and so they took some liberties with where they would put them. So these machines actually lined the one side of the hallway to the men's room. And
so there's no cameras in the men's room.
There's no cameras in the men's room, and there's, in fact, no cameras in the hallway to the men's rooms. I mean, we just checked everything we could think of where they would possibly have a camera. And, of course, you know, like so many other things in that casino, it was just kind of very poorly thought out. And so we figured we could just sit there and just play for a really, really long time, which was the
just
case.
Borrow a handful of quarters every now and then.
Yeah, so we would just kind of open the bottom door and just scoop out some quarters, and then we just sat there feeding them a machine.
Oh, dear.
And it was like maybe the worst stretch of video poker that I've played. I mean, we couldn't hit a thing, but we sat there for 5 hours and, you know, basically did absolutely nothing. It was just like total exercise, but just the fact that we were getting so much of an advantage and playing a machine that actually was guaranteed 100% payback was kind of funny for us. And then we noticed them emptying hoppers nearby, so we figured we better stop that.
Yeah, it's funny because you didn't get caught.
Right.
One time
I would never do such a thing now, by the way. I have more sense than that.
Yeah, I was playing at Sahara on a dollar machine, which was the highest stakes I'd ever played for at the time. This was back in probably 95. And the change door at the bottom opened up. And I turned on the light immediately and said, it's open. I have not touched it, but close it. I don't want to be thought of as a possible. I don't want to be too tempted. And because I was assuming that the cameras were there. I don't know if they were or not, but oh well.
Yeah, most of the time I think that there's cameras there. I think I would have rather preferred to have seen a camera blatantly, because then we wouldn't have even been tempted to do such a thing. But we did laugh about it, and again, we weren't really worried about too much because we were in college, and that's kind of, we did a lot of goofy things. So,
well, at Vegas World, they would actually possibly have the brown camera cone, but no camera behind it. In other words, saving money on the camera, but have the cone there so you think you're on display. I would think that would be something they might try. Now, there's this travel agent in San Francisco named Mr. Chu. Now, he sold promotional chips to what's then the Las Vegas Hilton and the Flamingo Hilton, primarily to Chinese players. Now, I used to get them because when I first came to Vegas, I had a Chinese girlfriend. And she would get them for her and her girlfriend. And, of course, her girlfriend was matched her Taiwanese passport, and her name matched her driver's license, and they were different names. So she would get two. Now, you... Now, McAllister doesn't sound too Chinese. How did you get? How did you and Sam get this?
Yeah, so this was also something that kind of arose on the internet, and you know, just from trading stories with a gentleman who I think was Chinese. I mean, he certainly had an Asian name. I believe he was specifically Chinese, and he mentioned that he was getting similar offers. And what would turn out is you'd put up $1,400 in a credit card, and I think they gave you $1,525, or it might have been $1,480 or something like that. I think it depended on where you were coming from. If you were from Southern or Northern California, I think it was different. In any case, it was kind of funny, because when we started taking advantage of the deal, I mean, this really was a promotion for Chinese players. And so everybody that we dealt with along the way just seemed very befuddled that we would be that a couple of white boys would be trying to take advantage of this promotion, because as far as I know, it was really advertised in Chinese newspapers, and I don't really think it got very much further than that. But what I found that was kind of funny, I mean, the story of one of the times was that these promotion chips were a little different than Vegas World ones. They actually were worth what they said on the face, because if you won with them, you got to keep them. So the chips basically, it wasn't an action chip. So if you got $1,000 worth of this, you might be playing far more than $1,000 worth of action, because if you continued to win, you'd still have to play them. The chips themselves were non-negotiable, but they did stick around after a win. So what was interesting is that the dealers weren't really used to what these chips looked like, and they weren't traditional colors. Like the hundreds were blue, I think, and it was actually a shade of blue that was very similar to the shade of green they used for the 25s. And there was a cashier who basically didn't confuse those two denominations, and she was giving us the original amount of money to start playing. And so she was supposed to count out basically $1,480 or something like this. And she pulled out a whole stack of, she asked us which denomination we wanted. We said hundreds, and she pulled out a whole stack of hundreds, and then, which was way more than 14 of them, and then reached down to get more chips. And Sam and I looked at each other again and wondered where this was going. And she proceeded to count them out like they were 25s. And so she gave us quadruple the number of chips, and then the extra $80 or whatever, or $125 or whatever it was on the tail end. But it just looked very odd. And of course, she didn't seem to think this was odd at all. And so we just took the chips. And again, this was something I don't know whether I'd repeat in the future. But
I know I wouldn't, because that likely came out of her pocket, the way casino cashiers work. So
Even for chips, though, because I'm not sure that those were really.
I'm sure they counted them, and you know, and they had the vouchers, and they added them up. One of the things we did with, and these were real Mickey Mouse chips, and the I think it was the Riviera had 50-cent chips, which were pink and Mickey Mouse, and they were identical to the Hilton's $5 chips in terms of color, and there was no marking, no striping or so on the side. So we would slip in every three or four of those periodically, and certainly not every trip, but would not do that again.
On that topic, I'd like to add that many large casinos have a totally separate Asian marketing department that comes up with their own promotions and does things their own ways, and they're often more aggressive than the non-Asian marketing department. So it's often good to know some Asian players and ask them, what kind of deals are you getting? And if they're getting something good, you might say, oh, well, who's your host? And then ask them if they will repeat that same offer for you. And
ask away. It helps if you ask in Mandarin, though.
Well, there used to be a very good play at the Plaza where they would add 20% to whatever you bought in for in promotional chips, the use till you lose kind, as long as you played them in the casino. And that was a great deal, and I would do that, and I would play them through in craps. And I got the feeling that most of their customers doing this were Asian, but somehow I found out about it, and they had no problem honoring that deal with me until they felt that I was abusing it and made me stop.
I suspect you were.
Okay, so I hear the Golden Nugget used to have a slot club that spit out redeemable tickets. How did that work?
Okay, so that was another one of our favorites because, well, basically they had a restaurant called Stefano's. Again, something.
This is Golden Nugget in Las Vegas.
This is in Las Vegas, yeah. So they had a restaurant called Stefano's where the waiters would sing, and unfortunately that restaurant has not been around for a number of years, but I don't know if you guys remember that.
Oh, I remember it well. I remember it well, and we would take it. Now, the Landry's folks, when they took over, they do restaurants right. So the Landry's restaurants in there are probably better quality, but the casino's less. But the restaurants are good. Landry's.
Right. Yeah, so they originally, when they had their slot club, it wasn't, you didn't have these magnetic cards, basically, that that all of them use now. Essentially, the card was punched, an old key punch card. And it didn't particularly matter whether you had your card in or just a generic card. But what would happen is that after every $75 put into the machine, this little yellow ticket would spit out of the dispenser at the bottom of the machine. And this was their way of player tracking for comp purposes. I don't think there was any information transmitted back according to any card that you had. I mean, maybe that was something that they did later. But you basically had to redeem these tickets, and these little tickets were worth 50 cents apiece. Now, what we ended up noticing was that not only did they have a decent video poker, they had a 6-9 jacks machine, and of course, getting a 50-cent ticket for every $75 coin in makes that a slightly profitable game. But what was more interesting was that if you looked under the machine where the tickets came out, there was a little LED readout that showed basically a countdown for when the next ticket was going to pop out of the machine. And so we would just spend a whole lot of time going up and down these rows of slot machines, looking under the machines for, you know, low numbers. So we figured if we could find, you know, a very low number, even on a slot machine, we could just put in a couple of dollars and basically get a 50-cent ticket, not to mention whatever return the slot machine would have, which, even though it would be bad, it certainly was more than offset by the presence of the ticket. So we would hang out there for a little while, what was interesting, again, is that, you know, we're basically just college students. We really don't have a lot of money. And if you accumulated enough of these tickets, you could get a nice lobster dinner up at Stefano's. And, in fact, I think if you got 900 tickets, you got to have a RFB for three nights, which included, like, limo service and things like that, which was also kind of cool. And I don't think what they really anticipated when you go to turn them in, that it was going to be a whole bunch of singles. I think most of their clients turning in a lot of tickets would have strips of tickets from being in a machine, but ours were always in singles because we did it this way.
Very good. So, good. I started to play right when that was ending up, and there were a lot of people going around looking for those low numbers. It was not a hard advantage play to figure out, and a lot of people were in on it. Now, you also played sometimes in Atlantic City. What kind of interesting promotions did they have there that you were able to shoot some angles at, so to speak?
Well, Atlantic City, I basically, when I graduated college, I moved back east and got a real job. And this caused me to be...
My condolences, but go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. The job that I had was market making on an options exchange. So, in fact, it was just more gambling and probably at way higher stakes, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
Yeah, I could come to work and lose a lot of money, so I guess that doesn't really qualify as a real job. But anyway, so I was certainly a lot better capitalized, and there were a lot of opportunities in Atlantic City for machines of all sorts of different denominations. And you know, when you had, I guess a lot of the slot clubs would pay something like 0.5%, which was fine, except that they would do a lot of point multiplier days and include a lot of bounce back cash. In fact, Atlantic City still, by and large, does have cash back, although it's not nearly as generous as it used to be. But, you know, even Harrah's properties that go on with their reward credits and everything also give cash back, which I don't believe they do in Vegas, aside from the bounce back. So there would be times when they would have, you know, a really good multiplier or something like that, and we could, you know, go in and play. I mean, these are the same sorts of usual things that we that you've experienced as well. So one thing that would be interesting to do is there was a the Atlantic City Hilton basically had a promotion. It was a loss rebate, so for up to $3,000 they would reimburse 100% of the losses. Now
take me back to those days.
Well, they still do loss rebates from time to time. In fact, I've seen one recently, but it was not one that I was particularly interested in due to my schedule. But they, you know, they were giving back 100% of your losses for up to $3,000, and basically the right way to play those things. And you know, I hadn't seen the analysis done at the time, but I worked out that basically the variance is way, way more important than the expectation of the machine that you're playing, because you want to you basically have so much value in the loss portion of it. That what you want to do is combine that with a healthy small chance of a win. So on average, you're either just looking for a big score or you're looking to lose everything, and you want to do that as quickly as possible. So generally speaking, it was right to play the $100 slot machine and just try to, you know, lose it as quickly as possible. If you happen to hit a big jackpot, then you just walk away. And I told a bunch of my friends this on the exchange floor, and we had basically like carloads of Philadelphia Stock Exchange members going down and just, you know, putting $3,000, you know, very quickly through. And these guys were not really strangers to gambling, but, you know, it was interesting that getting some of the reports back, I figure, you know, our group made about $80,000 off of this promotion. I mean, granted, there were a bunch of people and we all started bringing family members and all that stuff. But, you know, one thing that was sort of a variant on this that actually a friend of mine had come up with, although I'd heard similar things in the past, and I know it's very common now, but if you pull your card, if you play a slot machine with a bonus round and you happen to hit one of the bonus rounds, you just pull your card out, and then the bonus doesn't get added to your total. So you can, in fact, come away with a loss, an apparent loss, and an actual win, or some combination of those two.
That may not work anymore.
Oh, I don't think it does. I actually think it's very bad to do that. In fact, I was listening to your show from a few weeks ago, and it was, you know, you made it a point to say that not only is it not working, but they will actually keep track of who's doing that.
And, so we got about 2 minutes left. Now, okay. Some of your shenanigans were a bit shady. Are there any situation opportunities you came across that were too shady and you ran away from them?
Yes. So like I said, I've regretted a few things that I've done because I think they're kind of silly and whatever. But at the, you know, eventually I kind of, you know, learned that there's really a lot more considering that you have to do before you try to take advantage of something that just appears good. There's a lot more thought that really should go into that. And so there's one day that I was playing in a casino in Atlantic City, and I was playing a $25 video poker machine that takes 5 coins normally. And so for, you know, $125 a pull, you were playing Royal Flush is worth $100,000. And, you know, I know Bob has played a lot of these. You talked about it in your book. But this particular machine, since the coins, the $25 coins in Atlantic City at the time were very, very large, and if you put them in too quickly, the little light sensor or whatever that was detecting the coins wouldn't function correctly. And basically, putting 5 coins in very fast would cause one of them to pop out, but the machine to register 5 coins is being played. And you could actually do this fairly repeatedly. I noticed this by accident, just because I was feeding coins. It was easier than feeding bills. The bill acceptors weren't so good. But when I, you know, just noticed this and that it was not a mistake, I, you know, did a little math and figured out this was probably something like a $3,000 an hour proposition at the rate that I was able to do it. I actually stopped playing. And in fact, not only stopped playing, but I just stopped going to that casino because I did not want to even be tempted to do that because the casino is definitely going to find out about this and is not going to be pretty. I mean, you can say whatever you want to defend yourself, but it's pretty clear that you're taking advantage of something definitely wrong with the machine. So to keep myself from even being tempted, I just stopped going. And about a year after that, I wanted to demo it to my friend Sam, who had flown out to visit me, and just to show him that it could be done, and it didn't work anymore. And I was very glad about that, actually.
Well, it's probably Sam's fault. Okay. Thank you, Brian. This was interesting. And we actually have lots more questions to ask Brian, and so which means you might be forced to come back in January or February.
I would love to come back.
All right, and I would love to have you back. So thank you, Brian McAllister.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So, Michael, what did we learn tonight?
Yeah, I learned about I love that story about the Vegas world, and I knew it from your book, but I enjoyed hearing about how he abused that as well, and that brought joy to my heart to hear anyone was doing that.
And I suspect there's stories about Vegas world that neither he nor I are quite willing to admit yet, so maybe someday. But now, the South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. A few months ago, they had a horse racing promotion, and now they have a NASCAR promotion. Four times a day, 3:30, 4:30, 7:30, and 8:30. If you've played $50 coin in the previous hour before this event, you get to pick. You have a 1 in 8 chance of picking a you can pick one driver and a 1 in 8 chance of winning, and all the winners share $5,000. So it has been somewhere in the range of $50 to $150, depending on time of day and which driver it was. Were I picking, I would intentionally stay away from drivers such as Dale Earnhardt Jr. or Jimmy Johnson or Jeff Gordon, simply because they are so popular, people have heard of them, and so there's likely to be more people betting on them. So they have the same chance of winning as anybody else, but the prizes is likely to be smaller. Halloween is going to be double points in video poker. This coming Tuesday at noon, I'll be teaching 9-6 Bonus Poker Deluxe, the beginner version. This is the 99.64 game. Bonus Poker Deluxe is like Jacks or Better, except you receive single money for two pair and double money for, and much more money for the four of a kinds.
80.
400, yes. At the Palms, they're having a month-long monster cash drawing. So prizes, you win every Friday and Saturday night, and you can win up to $3,000 in these drawings, and a certain number of these people get entries into the $50,000 winner-take-all drawing that's going to happen on October 27th. So if you're feeling lucky, that's a big one to go for. The PEW, Play, Earn, and Win, has a Think Pink theme in honor of breast cancer awareness. Top prize is a $100 Macy's gift card, which requires 40,000 points to earn. All right. Next week, our guest will be a Holy Roller. This is a blackjack team made up of church members. There's a movie about the Holy Rollers, and so Colin from the Holy Rollers will be talking to us next week. Now, Michael, you recently had some problem refinancing your house.
Yes, I've been trying to do this for months. I have been trying to pay down my principal to have at least 20% equity in the house, to have a bargaining position to at least talk about refinancing, but through most of the market, my house was going down at the value at the same rate that I was throwing extra money in principal to pay down my mortgage. So I never, until recently, had enough equity in the house to even hold a discussion about refinancing. But we seem to have hit bottom, and I felt that I finally had enough bargaining power to ask. And Bank of America held my original mortgage, so I figured I would just go to them first. And they took my application, and it was just a horrendous process. They asked about every single penny moving through my many accounts, and it didn't help that I have a foreign corporation and a foreign bank account, and they wanted letters of explanation about every little thing. And I knew they were going to deny me all along, and I felt that they were just humoring me to make it look like they were entertaining my application. But after a great deal of fuss, they finally turned me down. So I went to a friend of a friend who works for Stateline Funding, and I asked him if he would be interested, and he said sure. And I gave him a couple years of old tax returns and bank statements, and that was just about it. It was very simple and painless, and you know, there were some questions that he asked me, and I said yes, and he said, well, you know, let's not muddy the waters with that. Let's just, you know, ignore that. So they made it very easy. I got a much better rate that Bank of America offered me. So I would like to put in a good word for Stateline Funding here in Las Vegas. Their phone number is 871-7800, and their website is statelinefundinginc.com. So I'm very happy with them, and I just closed on my refinance on Wednesday.
I think if I were a bank, I'd have great hesitation about lending money to a wizard who could magically make it all disappear. So,
or he can magically make more money.
Ah, very good. Now, there was a tax situation. A friend of mine was going through a tax audit. Now, I look forward to a tax audit as much as I would look forward to a root canal. This is awful. So I was sympathizing with him, and he said, it's not so bad. He is bonded with the auditor. And so then so they both talked about Alzheimer's, because my friend's wife and the father of the auditor both have Alzheimer's, and they're dealing with that. And so it occurs to me that we worry about deductions of this and deductions of that, but when it actually happens, it is a negotiation between human beings. And so the good negotiators can do better on that. And so, but it also occurred to me, my friend said, is that currently, according to his accountant, the IRS auditors are taught to bond with the people they're auditing so that they find a way to become friends with you. And so now you tend to confess more to your friend. And I would think, generally speaking, that would be a bad idea. Be friendly enough, but this is not your friend. An audit is something where there is considerable risk. So I hope I never get audited again, but if I were a betting man, and I am, I guess I will be audited again, because it just comes with the territory. Did you listen to the debate last night?
Yes, I did, and so did a lot of other people. And I noticed that right after the debate, the line on the election changed significantly. Obama went from about a -450 favorite to about a -300 favorite at PinnacleSports.com. That equates to a drop in a probability of winning of 82% to 75%. So I think it's a good time to buy Obama right now.
Very good.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.